There's an emphasis on poison prevention in March, so it's a good time for reminders of how to keep ourselves and those around us safe from accidental poisoning. Especially for the little ones in our lives, we need to stay on top of what the risks might be and how to avoid them. Hi, I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, in for Larry Mueller. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We always appreciate when Donna Lotzer comes by to share advice. She's a clinical pharmacist at UW Hospitals and Clinics, and is a poison education coordinator at their Poison Prevention and Education Center. And Donna, always a pleasure to have you with us.
Good morning. Thanks.
And it's an important topic, so I'm glad that you could join us for that. Well, first of all, let's start with some basic definitions just to make sure we all know what we're talking about. What makes a substance poisonous, and is that different from toxic?
No, toxic and poison would be pretty much the same thing as far as definitions go. A poison is something that would be likely to make you feel sick. So you're going to have symptoms or some signs of illness. Sometimes, of course, it's in how much a person takes. If they're sampling a very minute amount of what might be, for example, a toxic plant, it may not be enough to hurt them, whereas if they ate a large amount of it, then it could make them ill. So sometimes there's degrees, but there are certain things that we know to be potentially harmful or toxic.
And who's most at risk for poisoning?
Well, as you might guess, kids 5 and under account for about 50% of all calls, at least, to poison centers. Mm-hmm. They are totally curious, for the most part can't read labels, so warnings and things don't help them. And they have to investigate their world by putting everything in their mouth. So it goes hand to mouth, leading to potential problems.
But that's not to say that there's not a poisoning risk for kind of everybody 5 and over either. What are some of the ways that, say, teens or adults or elderly people might encounter a poisoning situation?
Older adults are probably the next biggest focus group because, for one thing, they can make mistakes with medicines. The vision's not so good, and so you may grab the wrong item out of the medicine cabinet. You may eat something that's not meant to be food because it's been stored in the pantry with edible items. So those things can be a problem, especially for older adults. And, of course, they've got their kids and grandkids. And so if you're not used to having a youngster, for example, they may get into your medicines in a drawer, mm-hmm. or go in your bedroom and get into the perfume or something else like that. Teenagers, unfortunately for all of us, tend to explore. And they may want to take medicines that aren't intended for them or do other things that would fall into the category of misuse or even abuse.
So it's the examples that you're giving, it sounds like a lot of the risks are actually at home.
True. Probably 80 or so percent of poison center calls, are things that happened in a home setting. So it could be the caller's home, it could be grandma and grandpa's home, it could be the babysitter, but a home setting is certainly the most common one for poisonings.
So let's talk about some kind of housekeeping tips, mm-hmm. for making a home safe. And I think the example you just gave is really good, that it's not just for who's there regularly, but for who might stop by and isn't there all the time, so maybe kind of out of sight, out of mind as far as taking care of those things.
Absolutely. In fact, especially for medicines, keeping things not only up high, but physically out of sight. It may help to put it in a cabinet, but you might want to consider having a box that locks, even if it's in a cabinet, because kids can climb. They'll push a chair to the countertop, up on the countertop, into those upper cabinets, and something happened you didn't anticipate. So looking at medicines and keeping them safe, everything having labels, household cleaners, even gasoline and chemicals in the garage or in the basement, those need to be labeled, secured properly, and hopefully out of reach of anybody that is not intending to use them.
And with the medicines, I'm guessing that it's a good idea to keep them in their original bottles, not just to make sure that people know it's medicines, but if say, a child gets into it, so people know actually what that child might have ingested.
Right. When people take their medicines and put them into the little, I call them med keepers, I guess, mm-hmm. That's great for the person remembering to take it. But if somebody comes along and pops 4 or 5 or more of those open at a time, now you have no idea what the stuff was that might have been inside. Same thing with household cleaners. Think of a blue household cleaner, but then if you pour it in a different container, it might look like a sport drink.
Mm-hmm.
And so somebody might swallow glass cleaner thinking that it was a sport drink. Or a floor cleaner has the same brown color as honey.
Hmm.
Different consistency, but for a small child especially. So you need to keep things in the proper container, whether it's medicine or whether it's household items.
Are there ways to talk to kids, even really young kids, that make it safer, that kind of makes it less likely that they're going to think something is kind of for the taking if they see it?
Well, I try to teach kids at Safety Town every year, and these kids are 4 and 5 years old. And that's a pretty tough audience. So what I do there is try to teach them that if somebody gets into something they shouldn't, that they need to tell a grown-up and let the grown-up hopefully sort it out. And so never to eat red berries outside in the yard without asking a grown-up. Never to take something that they may find on the floor at home without a grown-up. I show them containers of products like food, you know, crackers, cookies, but then I'll show them a container of a household cleaner and have them tell me which one is good to eat and which one they need to stay away from.
Are there any ways that people talk about, say, medications that they think they're just kind of being cute that could actually be dangerous? I'm thinking of people talking about, like, even candy. Vitamins as candy.
Right. Adults should never, when they're giving medicine to a youngster, say, okay, take this, it's good for you, or it's candy. Adults should not let kids take candy or take medicines on their own. So if you set the bottle of gummy vitamins out on the kitchen table and tell the kids, number one, they're going to learn how to get into the safety closure quickly. And number two, they may decide that, you know, if one is good, 10 is better. And they may take way too many.
Mm-hmm. So is it bad that, like, kids' vitamins are fruit flavored and shaped like little characters? I mean, maybe they should just look like medicine.
You know, if you look on the store shelves these days, even adult products now come as gummies when it comes to vitamins, and calcium supplements come in chocolate squares, you know, that looks like a candy bar. And so, unfortunately, I think the marketing people have, like, just gone overboard over the years. And a child may grab the laundry detergent pod that people have heard about over the last couple of years, thinking that looks like a candy item, and bite into it and end up with a highly irritating,
that,
you know, chemical from the laundry pod in their face, in their eyes, swallowed. And so look-alike products, I mean, adults, when you're buying these things, just have to think a little bit more as to what they're purchasing.
Well, and one really good point is, too, and I mean, I think people are used to thinking of this, like, with, you know, having a child in a bathtub or things like that. But, mm-hmm. you know, if when products are actually in use, if you're in the middle of cleaning something and the doorbell rings or the phone rings,
take it with you rather than set it down.
Take either the kid or the cleaning products, right? Right, one or the other, so they're not left unsupervised.
Right.
We are talking with Donna Lotzer. She's a clinical pharmacist at UW Hospitals and Clinics and is a poison education coordinator at the Poison Prevention and Education Center. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, sitting in for Larry Mueller while he is nursing a sore throat as a result of a cold. He will hopefully be back tomorrow. You can join in at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also send us an email at talk@wpr.org or post a question or comment on the Facebook page. That's The Larry Mueller Show. And Mueller is spelled M-E-I-L-L-E-R. Talking about kids, there's a saying, children act fast and so do poisons. You know, it just seems like anytime you can put into guarding things is important, but also being able to have a quick response if they do get into something. And you're really hoping everyone will take a moment today to do a particular thing. What would you like everyone to do, Donna?
There's one national phone number anywhere in the country that people can use to reach a poison center 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and it's 800-222-1222. And I would encourage people right now to take your phones and program that number into your phone. Do it for your home phone. Do it for your cell phones. The 800-222-1222 will route you to your local poison center regardless of where you happen to be. And there's even an iPhone app. So you go to the iTunes store and you can pick up the free app that will download that phone number for you.
And is it just the phone number, or does it actually have information about poisons and things like that?
You know, my phone's a dumb phone, so I can't actually do it. But I believe, yes, it links you to other information
okay.
as well.
Great. And so, again, that number is 800-222-1222. That's for people poisonings. There's also a pet poison hotline.
Right. For the most part, a lot of poison centers will handle only human exposure calls or information calls. If you have something that has happened with a pet, of course, it's good if you've got a regular veterinarian to call that person for help. But there are two national poison centers that answer only animal calls. And one of them is the Pet Poison Hotline, which is in Minnesota. And the other one is affiliated with the ASPCA. They work out of Urbana, Illinois. So those are two good places to go for pet poisonings to whatever they happen to get into.
And the pet poison helpline is 800-213-6680. That's 800-213-6680. That has certainly come up on the shows when we're talking with Sandy Sawchuk, especially Dr. Sandy Sawchuk, a veterinarian. I know that there are fees involved with those
right.
hotlines, but Donna, you were saying before the show that it's really important that people call the appropriate hotline instead of trying to call a human hotline and pretending it's a pet that they're, you know, or pretending it's a person when it's really a pet. What are some of the reasons why that's really not a good idea?
Well, it's not a good idea because pretty quickly, usually the trained specialist at the poison center is going to figure out that when you say your 70-pound 2-year-old child, you know, got into a plant in the backyard or something, that doesn't quite sound right. But there are certain things that can be highly toxic to dogs, or highly toxic to cats, or highly toxic to other animals that may not even be a problem for a human. And so if it does involve an animal, you need to take steps quickly to find out about it. But it may be good to check with a specialty service like your vet or one of these others to make sure.
And Donna, when someone calls a poison hotline or helpline, what happens? What are the kinds of questions that they ask?
They're going to ask, one of the things they need to know, of course, is your phone number. Because probably half the calls that a poison center has incoming is going to have at least one follow-up call made to be sure that the person is okay. If they were feeling ill at the time of the first call, to make sure that, you know, those symptoms went away. Or if the person has to be seen medically, they need to be able to follow up to see how things went. So, you know, that's a really important thing to know. And then you need to know the age, oftentimes the weight mm-hmm. of the individual. How long ago did they get into whatever it was? And are they feeling ill at the time of the call?
Mm-hmm. And in that case, if, say, it was prescription medicine or you think it was,
right.
it's very good, I'm guessing, to have the actual bottle with you so you can, even if you don't know what it all means on the label, that you can read it to the person
yeah.
on the hotline.
Have the container if it's a medicine, even if it's something like a bug spray. There are so many different versions of bug sprays. Mm-hmm. that if you've got the container there, it's really going to save a lot of time.
Let's go to the phones, and Margie in Milwaukee is up. Hi, Margie.
Hi. I have 4 grown children, 25 to 40, and I used to call the Poison Control Center a lot when they were little. And I just want to vouch for how valuable it was. And, you know, they saved me a lot of stress. And I like the fact that when it was something specifically serious, that they did call and recheck how mm. things were going. And I appreciated that. My now 35-year-old son got into Grandpa's heart medicine one time, and the 40-year-old cousin told on him. And so Poison
Thank
Control,
goodness.
You know, told me to get to the pharmacy and buy some Ipecac syrup and different things. And they told me later when they called to check up on him that he probably would have been dead in 3 hours.
Wow.
So that put the fear of God in me. But that was a godsend. I want to know specifically today, as I've got 8 grandchildren now, do they still make the Mr. Yuck stickers?
And Donna, why don't you describe the Mr. Yuck stickers?
Okay. The short answer to your question is yes, and we'll talk about it for a second. The Poison Center serving all of Wisconsin is in Milwaukee, actually, at Children's Hospital. And if you want to get Mr. Yuck stickers, call that 800 number when someone answers, tell them you don't have an emergency. You're just looking to get the stickers, and they can help you with that, actually. Mr. Yuck has been around since 1971, and it is a copyrighted symbol. It's a green sticker with a scowling face. It's meant to go on items in the house that you want children to stay away from. So you, as the adult, put the sticker on the product, teach the child, this green sticker means stay away, and the sticker has the phone number to a poison center on it.
Oh.
Just in case something happens anyway.
Wow.
Well, I've actually drawn the sticker, or drawn the picture on some of my bottles at home because I didn't have any stickers. So right.
Well, Milwaukee can help you. The poison center can help you
great.
With that.
All right,
thanks.
Thanks for that, Margie, and congratulations on getting all those children to adulthood. It sounds like there were some tense moments in there. So, Donna, the poison. Let's give the poison poison control hotline.
Sure.
Again,
it's 800-222-1222.
And you said that's kind of a gateway for wherever you are.
Correct.
They'll get you connected up.
If you're traveling in any part of the country, actually it extends to American Samoa, the Virgin Islands, Puerto Rico. So the number obviously has a wide range of utility. If you have certain phone services like satellite phones, it may actually route you to a poison center that's not geographically closest to you. But there are trained and certified pharmacists, nurses, and other professionals who can help you regardless of which poison center you get.
Talking with Donna Lotzer about poison prevention, I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, sitting in for Larry Miller. You can join in at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Do you know what items in your house can be a poisoning risk? And do you know what to do if someone has ingested something that could be dangerous? If you've had an experience with a near miss on a poisoning, we'd be interested in hearing that too. Jason Butler, our on-air producer today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Right now, we're getting important advice on preventing accidental poisonings. And Donna, let's go back to the phones, and Cheryl in Milwaukee is up. Hi, Cheryl.
Hi, how are you today?
Doing well.
Good.
Good. I've been very fortunate to have raised two perfect sons who are now married, and I have grandchildren, and one of them is a doctor. So I just had to comment and say, when it comes to poisons, both for humans as well as animals, and we've been an animal family, I have been an absolute advocate of putting it away and locking it up. And I put all Tupperware in the cabinets that were reachable to the toddlers. And they had more fun with the Tupperware cabinets than they ever could have had with any of the poison.
That
makes
great.
Perfect sense.
So basically,
I locked it up, I put it away, and I was a working mother, and my children went to daycare, so they understood what was yucky and what wasn't yucky, and they never even saw it. They never, ever, I never had to call the poison center once. Hallelujah.
Yeah, that is something to celebrate, Cheryl. Thank you for that. So basically putting something a lot more attractive to them where they can reach it, Donna. It sounds like a good approach.
Yeah, my children have always been feline, and I have a bottom cupboard that they love to get into. And I have nothing in there but, you know, boxes and plastic and stuff that they can get in and play with. And it makes them very happy, and they stay away from everything else.
Thanks for that call, Cheryl. You know, we've been talking about prescription medication. One of the things that maybe people don't think about right away is that I'm guessing most medicine cabinets have some expired prescription drugs, whether it was, you know, say a cough medicine with codeine when you had a really, really bad cough, but, you know, you didn't finish it off and the cough went away, but now it's sitting in your cupboard. What are some of the things that we can do? You know, here we are, spring cleaning season. What are some things to think about when we're looking at things really through that poison prevention lens?
There are opportunities to safely dispose of unused or unwanted medicines or things that have expired. It used to be that there were federal programs that allowed for collections twice a year. In Wisconsin, we just heard recently that they're going to return to, probably a twice a year opportunity for people to bring those medicines and safely get rid of them. But there are also in a lot of communities in Wisconsin what I would call drop boxes. They're usually in the police departments, and you simply take your unused medicines and bring them there. There's a big secure box that you can put it in. And that's probably the safest way and the best way to get rid of medicines and other things like that that you don't need.
Because one of the risks with that, too, not related to poisoning, is prescription drug abuse.
Oh, heaven knows. Yeah, drug abuse, I mean, where people take advantage of leftovers or they will get into things like strong narcotic pain relievers or that, certainly can be a hazard for anybody that decides they want to be experimenting. So safely disposing of it in a way that it's not retrievable. Somebody can't take the bottle back out of the trash, for example, would be a good idea.
That's a great point, the drop boxes. I also thought that some registered pharmacies, at least, will take back drugs.
Some pharmacies are offering envelopes that you can put your medicines in and then mail it to a central location it is ultimately disposed of or incinerated. I think in the future, there may be more pharmacies that actually have drop boxes in the pharmacy, but there's not much for that. There's one, I believe there's a location or two in La Crosse right now, but I'm not aware of others.
Talking with Donna Lotzer about poison prevention, I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, in for Larry Mueller. You can join in with your questions or comments at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Carol from Hillsboro points out that batteries from musical greeting cards are dangerous if ingested, and she wondered if you could comment on that. That is certainly something I never thought of.
Button batteries nowadays are found in a lot of things. You can find them in remote controls. You can find them in phones. You can find them in things like greeting cards. And if these batteries are swallowed, they can open up, they can degrade. The chemicals that are inside can cause very severe burns to the throat, heading down into the stomach, and certainly end up with serious medical consequences. So if people know that there are button batteries in the home, in items, probably they should be out of the reach of kids. If one comes up missing and you suspect a child could have gotten into it, I guess I'd be calling my local doctor to see whether they want to do an x-ray and see if the battery might be in the child's stomach and what they need to do, whether they can let it go with watching or whether they need to retrieve it. But button batteries have the potential to cause very severe chemical or, electrical burns.
Wow.
If somebody were to swallow them.
And I'm guessing that's probably the same for pets as well.
True. Wow. Yeah, if a pet swallowed it. You know, some batteries are very small, like a hearing aid battery. Some of them can be almost coin-sized. Mm-hmm. And you have a risk of choking, where instead of going into the stomach, it would even go into the lungs. So button batteries are a really big hazard. And if people inventory, as I said, what they've got in the house, you may find out that you've got, you know, any number of things that contain those batteries.
Wow. Well, Carol, thank you for bringing that up, because that is certainly something that had not occurred to me. Donna, are there other things like that just might not be on people's radar that you have seen, you know, as problems?
I think of things outdoors, because we're all getting into the outdoor season. And so people are going to be looking at weed killers and bug killers. Pretty soon we're going to get the plants coming up, and people may not realize, they may not even be able to identify what the flowers are coming up in their garden. And so you need to know what's growing, whether it's a weed or whether it's something that you deliberately planted. If it produces flowers and or fruit, it's going to be attractive to a small child. And so you need to know what that is. I have my neighbor gardening in my garden, and unfortunately I realized I had nettles back there only after I grabbed them with my bare hand.
Oh, I had a stinging nettle episode, and
right.
It's not pleasant.
And so, you know, I managed to do myself in that regard, but it helps to know what's out there. And mushrooms. All too soon we're going to be having mushrooms, and you need to be extremely careful and not go foraging, whether it's in your yard or in the woods, for wild mushrooms, unless you absolutely know what you're doing.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of poisonous plants, the photo that we have as part of the program note for today is Digitalis, which is also called foxglove, a beautiful plant. And when I was looking it up, every single part of the plant is poisonous.
Right. It contains a derivative of a heart drug. And if a person were to swallow it, it would slow down your heart rate and could potentially cause other problems.
So
it's beautiful, but stay away.
Beautiful, but stay away. And also, you know, not knowing who, I mean, obviously, if it's in your own yard, you think, well, you know, I'm not going to go out there, but kids run through yards, pets run through yards.
Right.
Yeah.
And there are places that you can get lists of plants so you know which ones are poison or which ones aren't. My website at uwhealth.org/poison. Under educational materials has a common plants list.
And we do have a link to that up on the Facebook page. Let's go back to the phones and Vivian in Manitowoc. Hi, Vivian.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
What I'm calling about is the caution about when fresh fruit comes into, you know, into being, like nectarines and peaches in particular. I had an incident where I usually cut a nectarine or peach in half before I eat it. And one nectarine that I cut into half, it was all black and tarry inside. Well, it cautioned me not to eat it, so I was going to take it and dispose of it. And a piece of it slipped out of my hand and fell on the floor. And my dog snarfed it up just like that. He's a real hungry one. So he snarfed it up, and within a half an hour or so, he collapsed, and he was having a difficulty breathing. Well, we rushed him to the veterinarian, and the veterinarian told me that he had cyanide poisoning. And he says, what did he get into? And the only thing I could think of was that nectarine he had eaten, mm-hmm. and he says, that'll do it. He says, the peach pit, or the pit inside of there, the stone had broken open, leached into the peach, and caused this black tarriness. And he had enough of it in him that he got violently ill from it. He was throwing up, and he had collapsed. And we did get him to the veterinarian, and he said that he had thrown up enough of it that it wasn't going to affect him.
Wow.
He was a very sick dog for a long time. And it just cautioning, before you eat fruit, cut it open to make sure it's not rotten inside. Because it, especially in the warm weather, mm-hmm. Some of the fruit rots from the inside rather than the outside.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for sharing that, Vivian. And your dog was okay after recovering?
Oh, yes.
Oh, good.
He's fully recovered, but it did take him about 3 or 4 days to get back
wow.
to normal.
Well, that really goes back to what you were saying, Donna, that, you know, poisons act fast.
Exactly. And stone fruits like plums and peaches and nectarines and apples, for that matter, apple seeds.
And apricots.
Apricots, the soft inside, not the hard pit, but the soft inside kernel, if you will, does contain cyanide. And the fruit does not have to be spoiled if a person or dog or any other animal were to eat enough of those soft inside kernels, you could develop symptoms related to cyanide. And cyanide, if a person gets a large enough dose, basically stops your breathing. And so this is part of what could have happened with the dog. But those soft inside things, for a human, one inside kernel or pit is not going to be an issue for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but it may be that it was different in the dog, or it may have been just based on size or that, too.
Right. Wow. Well, thank you so much for that caution, Vivian. And we're very glad that your dog came through okay. You can join in at 1-800-642-1234 if you have questions or comments about poison prevention. Donna Lotzer is happy to help. Let's go back to the phones and Gloria in Luxembourg. Hi, Gloria.
Hi.
Hi.
Hello.
I heard someplace that if you have excess medication that you don't want to take and you don't know where to take it to get rid of it, that you can burn it. Is this true or is it not?
Absolutely not. When medicines are shipped to a licensed facility for disposal, they will go into a special incinerator at extremely high temperatures with all the air controls that you might imagine as far as emissions. And in that way, yes, then they are burned, if you will. But this does not mean that you on your own should be like tossing them into your fireplace or putting them in your charcoal grill or something like that. That would definitely not be a good way to get rid of your medicines.
It seems like it could be very dangerous.
Yeah, I would not be comfortable with that at all.
All right. Well, thanks for calling, Lori, and bringing that to our attention. So really leave it to the professionals is what you're saying.
If you're looking to get rid of excess medicines, again, you can talk with your pharmacist or look to buy the mail back envelopes or, see if there's disposal options within your community.
Thanks for that call, Gloria. One of the points, obviously, the best thing about calling a poison control center is finding out if you or the person that has ingested something is in danger and getting good information. But you also point out that it saves some medical costs as well.
Exactly. People can call the poison center. They don't have to have a poisoning emergency. If they just want to know how to properly, say, dose their two-year-old with a cough and cold medicine or something, much better to call and ask ahead of time than have to call afterwards and say, I just realized that I gave my child twice the amount of medicine I should have, and they may need to get medical attention. So if you have a question in advance of an exposure, poison centers are a resource that can be used for that as well.
And they can also prevent maybe a trip to the emergency room.
Yes.
If they're able to say, maybe keep an eye on it.
Yeah. Most of the time, poison centers can handle calls right at home, where the person is. It's pretty unusual to have to go in and be medically seen. If a person is in a situation where, let's say there was an overdose and they need to be medically seen, poison center can call ahead. Tell the hospital, the person's coming in, here's what they took, here's when they took it, and here's what you need to do. So when the patient gets there, the medical staff are all prepared to handle things without any kind of delay.
Oh, so it's almost like, maybe it's more on when you see it on TV, but when like the ambulance is calling ahead to the emergency room, giving, vitals and stuff like that.
Poison centers talk to ambulance personnel. They talk to people in the clinics. They'll talk to people in the hospital emergency rooms on a routine basis. That's what they're used to doing.
I'm guessing that some people might think, I don't want to take the time to stop and make that call. I'd rather just get my child or whoever into the car, into the emergency room. But I'm guessing that they might be able to tell them some things that will be important to know or to do before they even get them in.
A poison center person is right there, just a phone call away, literally. Within a matter of seconds, you're going to get basic information and the poison center person is going to evaluate what's going on and decide whether or not there's a problem. So it's not like you're making a phone call waiting for somebody to call you back in an hour or two. You are going to get immediate professional help from poison specialists who know exactly what they're doing and how to handle your call.
And we were talking about being aware of plants outside. Is that something that poison centers can help too, is what plants are safe or not?
Absolutely. When I used to take calls at a poison center, we would have people tell us, okay, here's the shape of the leaf, here's the color of the flowers, squeeze a berry open and tell us what the seeds look like inside. And we would actually do physical descriptions over the phone to try and identify the plants. But whether they're indoor or outdoor, poison center staff can either with a description or preferably the name can tell you whether or not it's going to be a problem.
When we talk about food poisoning, we often kind of emphasize the food part and lump it in more with nutrition and things like that. But is food poisoning, either what to do about it or how to prevent it, is that something that poison centers handle as well?
Absolutely. Lots of Thanksgivings, I would sit, answer poison phones, and have somebody say, okay, I just realized that I left that stuffed turkey out for the last 8 hours. Can I put it back in the fridge? Can I still serve it to my family? And, I had to be the bringer of bad news and say, no, you probably have a beautiful bacterial breeding ground inside that bird. And at that point, it had to go. So food poisoning,
Thanksgiving is officially over.
Yes, yes.
Well, we have time for one more call, so let's go to Stella in Sturgeon Bay. Hi, Stella.
Hi.
Hi.
Excuse me. I just wanted to share, when I was in high school, a friend of mine shared with me, she had been babysitting, and it was for a toddler who couldn't speak and had gotten into the cupboard under the kitchen sink where apparently lamp oil had been stored and had spilled it. And she came in and there was kerosene smell all over the place, and she didn't know if he'd ingested any or not. And what she did was she opened up his mouth, swiped her finger around the inside of his mouth, and smelled it, and there was no kerosene smell. So she was able to deduce that he had not ingested it and had only spilled it.
Hmm.
And that struck me as being very quick thinking.
Yeah. First of all, lamp oil, what kind of a risk is that, Donna?
The biggest risk if a child tries to swallow it is that they choke, in which case it's going to go into the lungs rather than into the stomach. Usually the child is going to be coughing and choking and maybe even vomiting. This can lead to a chemical pneumonia. Child could become seriously ill and need medical attention. If it's on the skin, some forms of oil can actually cause a mild skin burn.
Mm.
So you still need to clean it off the skin, but it's not as serious as if it's swallowed and then aspirated into
okay.
the lungs.
And so we call it lamp oil, but it's actually kerosene.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so what about the swiping the finger in the mouth?
If a child was sitting with a spilled pool of the lamp oil or kerosene, had no symptoms, I think that's a pretty good idea that it may not have been swallowed, certainly not in a large amount. But I've never heard of doing that before. I guess, yes, that would be a good first step. It'd be something that I would still call the poison center. Tell them what you did. Tell them the result. And then let them help you further evaluate the child.
All right. Well, this has been a really informative program. Donna, let's encourage people one more time to program in that 800 number into their cell phones and landlines, I would say. What is that number again?
800-222-1222.
Again, that's 800-222-1222. And there is also that poison prevention app that's available for iPhones.
Right.
Not for Androids yet, but hopefully they'll develop that. So that's available through the iTunes store.
Correct.
Great. Donna, thank you so much. This is, as always, has been really useful and hopefully has saved some people time in getting some help when they need it.
And gives them a resource to call for help.
There you go. Donna Lotzer, clinical pharmacist at UW Hospitals and Clinics, and is a poison education coordinator at the Poison Prevention and Education Center. Always great to have her with us. Well, it's important to know how to keep ourselves and our loved ones safe from harmful substances, as Donna was just teaching us. We were talking about poisons, but you know what? An unhealthy diet can do some serious damage in the long run as well. Coming up next, we're going to find out how to buy healthy and delicious foods without breaking your budget. So I hope you'll stay tuned right here to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.